Thank you, thank you. Okay. I hope all of you had a profitable week. It was really, we had some ups and downs with the weather, but it was beautiful overall. Wanted to welcome those that are joining us electronically as well. And I'd like to begin today in 1 Peter 3 and verse 15. I'm reading from the New King James Version. But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and always be ready to give defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. As the Church of God, we take this fairly seriously. If you look at the table over there, I don't know how many different booklets we have available. We've got thousands of things on the websites. We are trying to give a defense. We're trying to teach people. We're trying to reach out to the world. Most of the world, though, if you do any research on the internet at all, most of the world at this time is opposed to anything that has to do with God. It is just attacks left and right. But there are extra-biblical proofs. There are things that we can cite in the creation, which you don't even have to go to the Bible. You can prove that God exists. And today, I'd like to take a look at that. So we're going to go through a few slides here if the machinery cooperates. Mathematics. In my job, I have to use a lot of mathematics. It's something that in school I somewhat enjoyed. I mean, is it possible to really enjoy mathematics? I'm not sure that it's possible, but it is something that for some reason with my mind it clicked, I understood it, and I was able to work with it, and that became a part of my job, and I use math every day in my job. There are some things about math that do point to a God, even if you don't mention God. In Romans 1:20, it says clearly they are without excuse. The whole quote is, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." And the world really is. I mean, if you look at some of these things we're going to look at today, there's no question. Looking just at math, okay? Math has order. It has properties that it follows. There are laws of math. And math has utility. As mankind, we couldn't create anything without math. You couldn't bake a cake without math. You need math. We need math. It is an integral part of everything that is done on this earth, by men, anyway. And there's a couple of examples. If A plus B equals B plus C, then A must equal C. And there's other things that are similar to that. Books and books and books are written on this. And it is something that we could consider. I mentioned baking a cake. One of the things about math is that it doesn't change. For instance, if you were following a recipe to bake a cake, and it says to use 1/3 a cup of flour and 1 cup of milk, every time you do it, you should get the same results, assuming that the quality of the ingredients is about the same. But what if 1/3 were not a constant? What if when you measured 1/3, one time you get 1/5, the next time you get 3/5, you wouldn't get a cake. You would get mush. All of that is repeatable. There's something that ordered this and something that made it real. And it's repeatable. And that's a very good thing because that's what keeps us going. There are the various properties. It governs mathematics. And you can, again, rely on these properties. There are a couple of exceptions, which if you look at a math book, they'll explain that. But think about it. All these equations, all these operations, math itself is fixed. It's repeatable. Who did that? Where did it come from? Could math have evolved? I'd like to hear the explanation of that, how something with that much order and precision could have evolved from nothing. It just doesn't make sense. The laws of the in mathematics, again, there's various opinions about it, but Wikipedia said, it has become customary to view mathematical research as establishing truth by rigorous deduction from appropriately chosen axioms and definitions. So in other words, scientists look at math for truth. When you do a calculation and come up with the answer, if you did the calculation properly, that answer is truth. You can rely on it. Look at the tower in Dubai. That could not have been built without math. If you made a mistake on the first floor in your mathematics, that whole thing would crumple. There's no other way to it. What about utility? John 1:3. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. God possesses great wisdom. He created that wisdom. He makes that wisdom. And math added in the creation. I mean, the scripture talks about drawing a circle on the face of the deep. Circles are mathematical. There is a formula for a circle, and they follow the same circle. If you have the same formula and plug in various components of that, if you vary one component, you might get a big circle, a small circle, but they're all going to be concentric if everything is the same except for that one variable. Why? What law insists that that would be the case, that it is repeatable, it is exact, and you can trust it? That's how we build things. In the Proverbs 8:22, maybe we'll turn there. Proverbs 8:22. Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived, apart from Jesus Christ, had somewhat to say about this. Proverbs 8:22, speaking about wisdom. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverse mouth I hate. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me kings reign and rulers decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, all the judges of the earth. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently will find me. Riches and honor are with me, enduring riches and righteousness. If you have wisdom, if you have understanding, if you have knowledge, consider the architects for the Dubai Tower. Do you think they were well paid? I think they're fabulously wealthy. And that's true of anybody that is really good at what they do. As they have that wisdom, as they have that understanding, that capability, their value goes up. That's the way it is in our society. And it's the whole thing was created by God. He created wisdom, and that's how we do our lives, using God's wisdom to make proper choices and decisions to do the right things, and then we grow. We become more like God because of that. Dropping down then to verse 26, while as yet he had not made the earth or the fields or the primal dust of the world, when he prepared the heavens, I, wisdom, was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limit so that the waters would not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master craftsman, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him. Okay, even the oceans are held in place by gravity. You can calculate that gravity. It can be measured. It is repeatable. It is something you can count on. We use it when we're engineering aircraft and various things like that. They have to take that into account using math. Without that math that God gave us, nothing would work. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary, speaking of logic, which is also part of this, I mean, you can logically deduce all these things step by step by step. Logic is a proper or reasonable way of thinking about or understanding something. A would be a particular way of thinking about something. B, the science that studies the formal processes used in thinking and reasoning. And if I can get my finger to work. That's the only two. So we find logic throughout everything. And we're going to look at more things today with logic and think about logic a little bit, because logic also has to be from God. It's ordered. It's reliable. If you follow proper logic, you're going to come to the right conclusions. And basically, that's what we need to do. Now, I mentioned that we use math at work quite a bit. Just to give you an example of how math is used and its reliability, this is a little clip I cut out of a program that's called A Matter of Your Safety that the company I worked for puts out. And what we're going to see here is a little explosion. This was done on purpose to demonstrate something, okay? And then I'll explain it after we watch this. Sound? Okay, that's a few tenths of a second, okay, six frames. The math behind this, that explosion was 480 volts, which is, we have voltage in all of electricity, 480 volts, 30,000 amps of available fault current, and 8 milliseconds of time. There is all those components to this. Now, if this was done in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, if you went to Paraguay and ran the same experiment with exactly the same voltage, amperage, and time, you are going to get exactly the same results. If you do it in the Ukraine, you are going to get the same results. The Antarctic, you're going to get the same results. All of that is because there is order to the math. The math is repeatable, and the electricity and the properties of the various components of that also follow the same laws. Like, for instance, those are copper bus bars. Copper conducts electricity. It has a certain amount of resistance. All that can be calculated. So when you want 30,000 amps of fault current, you use a piece of copper so thick and so wide and so long. And you can measure all that. It's quite repeatable. And you have to insulate it. What about the wires that are carrying the power to that demonstration? They have insulation on them. If you didn't properly conduct your calculations, how much insulation you needed to stop that electricity from flowing through to you if you touched it, you'd be in big trouble. There's math from start to finish, anything to do with that. And the other part of this is that this equals 3/6 of dynamite, okay, what we just saw. Consider then the sun. This is nothing. And guess what? The sun is nothing. The sun is a very minor star. There's much greater power out there. Where does it come from? Well, it wasn't an accident. I don't believe it. Now, another thing I wanted to mention about this, if we were to look at this in slow motion, which I do have a film that does that, you can see there's smoke coming out, the fire, there's various gases that come out, there's molten metal that comes out. Guess what? You can calculate the speed that molten metal is going to come out of there if you know the math behind this explosion and the properties of the metal you're working with. It's going to be different between copper and steel. They fly at different, because of their densities, they fly at different rates of speed. So you could look at that, you could calculate that, and even those elements have different properties, and they're all fixed. That's how we can build houses, because it's repeatable. If the properties of copper were different every time, you couldn't conduct electricity. How could you do it? Every single time, you'd have to recalculate everything and try to figure out how much insulation, what kind of distance, how much copper do I need to bring the power to the house. It has to be fixed and reliable, or we couldn't build a thing. And that shows intelligence. That shows that there's God in the background. Even if you don't mention God, he has to be there. Okay, so moving on. Another great proof of God is biology. The Dictionary.com defines biology as the science of life or living matter in all its forms and phenomena, especially with reference to growth, reproduction, structure, and behavior. I'd like to play a video. This is posted on YouTube, and the website is I guess I didn't write it down, but you can easily find this. Just do a search on flagellum on YouTube, and this will come up. It's amazing what they have discovered with the electron microscope about this single-celled, very complex little being. It's absolutely amazing. So let's watch this. And this is one of the reasons I had to come and test this yesterday, because I had to make sure we had enough bandwidth. Another calculation. Do we have enough speed? Do we have enough bandwidth? It, the flagellum, has been happily described as a tiny outboard motor, although by engineering standards and unusually for a biological mechanism, it is spectacularly inefficient. But the bacterial flagellum has been dubbed the most efficient machine in the universe by Howard Berg of Harvard University. Who's right? There's a big, big fight about this.
The discovery of the rotary motor mechanism in bacterial flagellum, reported by American researchers in 1974, sent shockwaves to the global biologist community.
Under the influence of Darwinian evolution, everything in the biology is assumed to be a kludge, just a fluke. If it works at all, then we're lucky. Orthodox biologists were shocked by the discovery of the exquisite man.
Such biological mechanisms are found on the scale of nanometers, or one millionth of a millimeter. Today's most advanced fine processing technology is still trying to advance to submicrometer fabrication. However, finely designed nanomachines have already been perfected by nature.
We have no reason to believe that the flagellum was perfected by nature, the naturalist position. I have to read this because they didn't. But we have every reason to believe that the nature acting blindly lacks the probabilistic resources necessary to originate.
The setup of the flagellar motor, which looked simple at first, was rather complex. Scientific and technological progress was needed before its mysteries could be unraveled.
Darwinian mutation and selection provided no help here. To understand biological machines, they must be reverse engineered. Darwinian, well, it's just so. Stories are usually invented once the serious science has been completed.
The rotation mechanism of flagellum has still not been clarified even after nearly 30 years. Salmonella, the main object of study, has several flagella. With a motor at their base, they are only 20 nanometers in diameter, but are over 10,000 nanometers in length. The flagellar motor is similar to man-made motors. The flagellum consists of rotor and stator units in the cell membrane, switching unit, bushing, universal joint, helical screw propeller, and so on. It rotates at a speed of up to 20,000 rotations per minute, which is faster than the speed of Formula One race car engines. The motor is driven by protons flowing into the cell body. Its energy consumption is 10 to the minus 16th watt, and its efficiency above 80%.
The flagellar motor has since been found to have a clutch. We think it's pretty cool that evolving bacteria and human engineers arrived at a similar solution to the same problem, said IU Bloomingdale biologist Daniel Kearns. This is a demonstration of the clutch in action and not in action. And this is in this little tiny thing, a few nanometers long. But natural causes have never been observed to manufacture intricate molecular machines. The only cause known to have the power to originate mechanical clutches is an intelligent cause.
Flagella are biological machines, with each flagellum made up of about 30 different proteins, numbering from several to tens of thousands. They all work together as one unit. In order to understand the overall mechanism of the movement of the unit, which consists of billions of atoms, it is necessary to study the three-dimensional arrangement of all of the atoms that make up this biological apparatus.
Irreducible complexity, a single system which is composed of several interacting parts that contribute to the basic function, and where the removal of any one of the parts causes the system to effectively cease functioning. Michael Behe.
You need to check the dynamics of individual atoms. This is a major challenge, and not many people believe that this can really be done. However, without understanding this, without observing what is going on, there is no way to understand the dynamics or structure of the protein nanomachines.
While serious experimental science still has to clarify how the flagellum is constructed or how it operates, Darwinists already know that it evolved via a blind, non-intelligent process of mutation and selection billions of years ago. Right.
How can the helical structure of the flagellar filament be formed in the assembly of a single protein, flagellin? How does it change its helical hand from left to right at the moment of cell tumbling? The flagellar filament is a tubular bundle of 11 protofilaments, each of which is an axial array of flagellum subunits. The inner double cylinder and outer protrusion are made by each flagellum domain. In 1970, Sho Asakura proposed a two-state protofilament model in which the two helical states have slightly different repeat distances. Surprisingly, a very slight difference, only 0.8 angstrom, was responsible for the helix formation of flagellar filaments.
The switching of flagellum depends critically on the precise 3D structure of the flagellum molecule, which in turn depends upon the precise sequencing of amino acids according to genetic instructions in the DNA.
Different combinations of two protofilament states with different repeats result in various helical structures.
The automatic switching of the specific flagellum molecules between two states is triggered by the abrupt change in direction of the flagellar motor. This in turn causes the helical propeller to change its sense so as to match the direction of rotation.
When the motor reverses instantly, shear stress is induced in the flagellum, which causes a small sliding shift between neighboring protofilaments. Then, several protofilaments switch into a state of shorter repeat, and the helix changes its hand from left to right. The bundle of flagellar filaments falls apart, and the cell tumbles by the force of unbalance. To understand where the accurate length switch mechanism was embedded, the molecular structure had to be determined at an atomic level.
Today, scientists aim for explanations of molecular machines at the atomic level. Darwinists must also move at the times by offering detailed, testable models of molecular evolution. They need to let go of these 19th century just-so stories.
This figure shows the structure of F41 in ribbon representation. It consists of three domains, D1, D2, and D3. Domain D1 is made of three long alpha helices and one beta hairpin structure. Domains D2 and D3 are mainly beta structures. The helical shape of the filament switches by switching the protofilament structure between two states. An abrupt conformational jump took place at the beta hairpin structure of domain D1. The downward shift of the beta hairpin appears to work as the mechanical switch to change the repeat distance of the protofilaments. The change in the flagellar helix is thus induced by such subtle structural changes in the molecular structure of flagellum.
Summary: to understand the operation of the flagellar motor, scientists need to know its precise 3D molecular structure down to the atomic level. The flagellum consists of billions of atoms organized in tens of thousands of precisely sequenced proteins. The reversal of the helical propeller of the flagellar motor from a right-handed to a left-handed coil is possible due to the existence of two states of flagellum that differ minutely in length. Our present knowledge of the exquisite intelligent design of flagellar nanomachines came through decades of laborious reverse engineering by teams of intelligent scientists. How this marvel of engineering and countless others like it in the cell ever came about via non-intelligent, blind natural causes is a matter of unsupported speculation and Darwinian just-so storytelling, not serious, testable science. ID proponents and ID as intelligent design reason that considerable intelligence would be required to innovate the flagellum. Darwinists think that no intelligence is what's needed. Okay, so a couple things about that I read in other sources and heard in other sources is that's going 100,000 RPMs, okay? When it changes direction in one quarter of a turn, 180 degrees. A race car, one of the best machines that we can make, at 8,000 or 10,000 RPM, consider throwing it in reverse at 10,000 RPM and see what happens. You're going to lose your legs. The transmission is going to blow apart and it's going to go everywhere. So that's pretty incredible when you think that this, with no damage at all, can reverse in one quarter of a turn. Is amazing. It's just amazing technology. And to think that somehow that created itself over time is I don't know how you defend that. A couple other things that, in just trying to get some background for my own understanding of this, that salmonella outside a host will live 7 to 14 days. Okay, so given the theory, okay, there's this pool of primordial soup. A lightning bolt hits that pool, and all of a sudden these salmonella are created. Somehow, with all the flagellum and everything they need, but there they are. They live 7 to 14 days without their host. Now, at creation, where did the host come from? If that was a single solitary pool, even if, say, that lightning strike caused 5,000 of these creatures to be created, what was there for them to eat? There is no host. They've got 7 to 14 days to figure out what to eat before they die. Okay? So that's one thing. I mentioned we're going to look at some logic. Is it logical to think that in 7 to 14 days they're going to figure that out? I don't think so. What about now you got this single lightning bolt, you've got these things created, they're living in this pond, they have 7 to 14 days to figure out how to reproduce. Consider that. How on earth did a single cell creation figure out totally on their own how to reproduce before they all died off in 7 to 14 days? Logic. It doesn't make any sense. You can't make that make sense. And it goes on and on. The way they reproduce, the way they move, what they eat, you cannot, just using logic, you cannot demonstrate that was an accident. And then you get down to what this film was talking about, billions and billions of particles. It's just the odds against it are so astronomical, it would fill up this entire computer with the zeros behind it. That would be against that ever happening by accident. It's just not going to happen. So, let's... Okay. So I asked these questions already, but why is a good thing to consider? Why does all this happen? The numbers are staggering, as we saw. The capabilities of these things are staggering, as we saw. You need God. You have to have God in the picture. It's not going to work any other way. Okay. There is a whole lot more. We don't have the time to go into it. There's a whole lot more about intelligent design. I did a little research on this particular topic on the internet, just to give you some idea, you talk about numbers. If you do a search for intelligent design on Google, there were 79,300,000 hits on that particular topic. Okay, so this is something that not only people are interested in, they must be, some of them have to be aware of it. There are 79 million references to this topic on the internet, on Google, just that Google found. People want to know about their creator. They want to know about God. And this demonstrates that there had to be a God. These things could not have been an accident. There's just too much that's involved in it. And that's, I didn't even scratch the surface. There's the salmonella could be a lifetime study. You wouldn't think a single cell. There is so much information in that about that, how it works, what it does, the various components, how many different little pieces and parts. It's just astounding. And then when you think about the reproduction and everything, it's amazing. Okay. Conclusion. And these are some of the shots from the Hubble telescope. This is the formation of a rose galaxy. And of course, the other thing is the Horsehead Nebula that's been around for a long, long time. When you consider all of those blips of light are probably 1,000 times bigger than our sun, and try to calculate all the energy, we don't have a calculator that will calculate how much energy it took for all that, okay? And to think that that somehow from the Big Bang, even that logic, where did the energy come from for the Big Bang to occur? We can't even calculate how much energy is involved in all of those stars, suns. And these are just two small nebula. This isn't anything, the whole thing by far. I mean, it's thousands and thousands and millions of these. Where did all that energy come from? We saw just what we can do with energy. We saw that copper blow up. That's millions and millions, if not billions of times more energy. Where did that come from? Belief in God today is under attack. If when I went to research some of this, you get one article about what you're looking for, and you get 45 where people are attacking it profusely. And you know this, if you have children in school, you hear the stories of what they're being taught, all this is being fought against. We've looked at some of the ways that God is revealed in his creation, and we learn to give a good reason why he is to be worshipped. Just by logic, just by observing nature and creation, you can prove that there has to be a God. You don't even have to have the Bible. Then, that, as we understand that, and as we drink that in and meditate on it, it increases our faith. Because we know that God is, he has to be. We didn't even talk about, well, how did an eye, what happened? How did beings get eyes? How did that happen by osmosis? Weren't the blind ones couldn't eat, so the ones that had eyes were able to prosper? I don't know. That doesn't make sense. So this all increases our faith. And it increases our faith with the aim of overcoming and growing and preparing, because we'll have to explain all these things to billions of people as they come up in the resurrection. They have been fed all of this. They need to be retaught, and we're going to have to be the ones that are there to teach it. So I'd like to look at some scriptures as we conclude. Let's turn to Isaiah. Isaiah has a number of really encouraging, positive little bits to help us. Isaiah chapter 55 and verse 8. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. I think so. We've never created a salmonella. We've created a lot of things. We've not anything anywhere close to salmonella. Okay, so God is far above us. 57 and verse 15, over a page or two. For thus says the high and lofty one who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place with him who is contrite and a humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble, to revive the heart of the contrite ones. And all this information does shore us up and does do that. Chapter 59. beginning in verse 8. The reason I stuck this in here, again, I had to skip a lot of things. If you do research on this, you're going to find 40 attacks to one proponent. Man does not want to know about God. One of the quotes that I had is, evolutionists say we can't open the door for God to stick a foot in, because once we do that, what we believe is gone, and we have to start changing our lives. Okay, verse 8, the way of peace they have not known, and there is no justice in their ways. They have made themselves crooked paths. Whoever takes that way shall not know peace. Therefore, justice is far from us, nor does righteousness overtake us. We look for light, but there is darkness, for brightness, but we walk in the blackness. We grope for the wall like the blind, and we grope as if we had no eyes. We stumble at noonday as at twilight. We are as dead men in desolate places. We all growl like bears and moan sadly like doves. We look for justice, but there is none, for salvation, but it is far from us. For our transgressions are multiplied before you, and our sins testify against us. For our transgressions are with us, and as for our iniquities, we know them. And you could keep reading there, but the whole idea is, you look at our society today, can you see this? Yes, you can see this. And that's just why God has to intervene, and of course he will. 61 verses 1 through 4. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are in bondage, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to console those who mourn in Zion, to give them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they may be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. And they shall rebuild the old ruins, they shall raise up the former desolations, and they shall repair the ruined cities, the desolations of many generations. And that's what we're destined for. And guess what? We are going to use faith, we're going to use trust in God, we're going to use math, we're going to use all of God's creation to accomplish that. So brethren, there's so much that God has shown in his creation. There's so many ways, just by the way things go each day, whether it would be the coming up of the sun, it's following laws to go, we're following laws, the earth's going around the sun when it rises and sets. Those are fixed. All this God has set in place for our benefit, so that we can learn, we can grow, and one day we can be sons of God. So that's what it's all about. And if you have trouble sleeping at night, I've got another 40 pages we didn't go through. Have yourself a great Sabbath.